my character defects that are leading me to make the decision to be angry, fearful, you know, guilty. But it's my character defects that are leading me to make those decisions. So that's the work of steps 4 and 5. It's just sort of an awareness thing, you know. You know, to admit to God and to myself and to another human being. God already knows, and I already know that the other human being was the hard part, but that's just me. You know, the other part, backtracking to step 3 a little bit, is I hear so many people talking about this wonderful life-changing event step 3 was for them, and it wasn't for me. It was just a decision, and it's like getting to be 100 pounds. Okay, so now what? And it wasn't at step 5 either. That's why I thought of it then. Step 5 wasn't this huge life-changing thing either. Mine kicked in at step 9, but you know. But steps 4 and 5 are when I become aware of what it is I'm doing that are leading me into all this misery. Every problem I have is self-will. Problem means Vicky's not getting what Vicky wants. And when I've laid my will and life on the altar, and it's really there, the situation is there. I mean, the situation remains the same, but the problem aspect goes away. And then I'm more willing to, there are always choices. I may not like them. You know, if somebody puts a gun to my head and says, give me your money or I'll shoot you, I have two choices. At least I can give them the money or I can get shot. There's choices. And I may not like either one of them, but I like one a lot worse than the other. But that's the whole thing about problem. Is problem. Problem means I'm putting self-will into whatever life is giving me. But going on to step 6, which is the entirely ready thing. Entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And since they're giving me so much pain, why am I not willing? And I learned that for me, it's because what I saw, if I saw that I lied to my husband, and I want to be a more honest person, I want to stop lying to my husband. But I keep lying to my husband, and I keep asking God to remove it, and I really want him to remove it, and I really want to stop lying, but I keep lying to my husband. And then in working a little more program, I see that the reason I'm lying is because I'm afraid of his getting upset with me. That the root of my dishonesty is fear. And what fear is telling me is, I'll keep you safe. So for me to be entirely ready to have God remove the dishonesty, I have to be willing to let go of the benefit of lying. You know, I have to be willing to face up to, okay, he might get ticked off. And I will not stop lying until I'm entirely ready to give up what my character defects are doing for me. A finance class I took at one point, the professor said something very profound. Every act we take has a cost and a benefit. And so we look at the cost and we look at the benefit and we make our best decision. And so it's that way with my character defects. They have a cost and they have a benefit. And for me to be entirely ready to let them go, I have to see where the cost outweighs the benefit, or whichever way you're going with it. The cost of keeping them outweighs the benefit. The cost of letting them go outweighs the benefit of... You know what I mean. So that's the entirely ready part. And then step 7 is just a prayer. And I like what it says in the AA 12 and 12 about this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Because I have to keep coming back. And I have to keep walking through the steps. And I have to keep looking at what I'm doing, and I have to keep asking God to remove my dishonesty, and I have to keep asking God to remove my fear, and I have to keep on. One of my good ones is, and comes under dishonesty for me, is I make up scripts. Sort of like if my husband doesn't kiss me goodbye in the morning, then by the time he comes home at night, we're divorced. You know, poor guy, he doesn't know what hit him when he walked in the door. What, somebody can say some little thing, and my brain is off and running and making up scripts, and my emotions follow this dishonesty inside my head. And so, but that's one of the big ones I have to, you know, look at being willing to let go, is the drama of the scripts. And so I ask God to remove them, but I have to keep asking him. And what I find is the more I keep on asking God, the less and less they come up, and the quicker and quicker I see them, and the less and less time they hang around once they come. And just not to get real upset at the process. I like the line in the Big Book where it says, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And I think that recovery, all of us are climbing the mountain of recovery, and we all have a different path. And my path may be flat and smooth at points and more steep and rugged on others. And your path may be different from mine. And that's okay, because we all follow different paths. And so then I clean up my side of the street with 8 and 9. But one really cool thing that I discovered in reading the Big Book is that God teaches, I put my will and life in God's hands at step 3. And then he shows me how to use my will correctly in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then in step 10, and this is so cool, it says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. I give God my willpower in step 3. He teaches me how to use it. And then when I know how to say, thy will, not mine, be done, with all the willpower I can muster, he gives it back. And skipping to step 12 because time is getting short. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And that's where the steps take me, is this whole thing about giving service. That's how I stay abstinent, is giving service, getting out of me and giving service. Practicing the principles in all my affairs, going back to problem. I have found the solution to every difficulty in my life lies in practicing the spiritual principles. If I look at what's going on and I go, what do I want to do? Is it honest? Is it loving? Is it kind? Is it tolerant? Is it patient? And I go through is it accepting? If I go through every spiritual principle I can think of and I can say yes to every spiritual principle I can think of, it's an okay thing to do. And if I say no to any one of them, I have to find something else. But practicing the spiritual principles in all my affairs is what this program is all about to me. It's how I give service. It's how I stay abstinent. It's how, you know, I talked at first about being depressed and miserable. I am not her anymore. I used to look in the mirror and think that I was the worst mistake God ever made. And I look in the mirror today and I think God did a pretty dang good job. Vicki's a pretty cool lady. I never thought that was possible. And it's not in God's time. God wants me to have all of recovery all right now. It's like this waterfall. And I come to the waterfall with a teaspoon and that's all I'm willing to take. But then I'm willing to bring a cup, and then I'm willing to bring a bucket. And maybe one day I'll be willing to just kind of jump into the pool and just kind of immerse myself. But my willingness to accept recovery is my willingness and my timing. God wants me to have it all right now. And so the more willing I am, and the more I wake my program, and the more I work God, the more I can become willing to allow these gifts that God is graciously giving me to expand and manifest. And thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Wow. Well, we have some time for sharing. So I would like to hear from y'all, and we're going to open it up in a little bit. And I just want to say thank you for coming and for being a part of this tonight. And, you know, there's just something about fellowshipping with other compulsive overeaters that fills us up in a way that food doesn't. And, you know, we don't have to go home and binge tonight or leave here and stop at the fast food place. Because we get something in our hearts when someone speaks to us from their heart. What comes from the heart goes to the heart. What comes from the head goes over the head. That's what I hear. So I'm so glad to be a part of this tonight and to just be here and get kind of filled up again. It has been a rough month for me in many ways, and I've had a lot of things that I needed to do that I didn't ever want to do. Most of you know that I lost my husband last month to cancer. And so the things that are coming up for me to do, I can only do one day at a time. So that has taught me one day at a time at a level I never thought about. I never really could imagine one day at a time like I have this past month, because there was no way that I could do it all, even though I had a lot of help and still have a lot of help. And so much support. Thank God for that. But one day at a time has become really, really important to me. Just get through one day at a time. Practice the principles that Vicki was talking about. Practice abstinence. Practice my program. And know that it's not the end of my life. Because I just know that whatever is ahead for me is going to be okay. I mean, there's this knowing that I'm kind of like, oh, really? And that's one thing that my husband had told me before he passed, because I kept asking him about the business and all of that. He just said, you will be okay. And, you know, and sometimes I've had to say to him, I hope you're right. But anyway, you know, the program has taught me that I will be okay. We will be okay. And I'm so glad to be here tonight. And I want y'all to come up here or stand up at where you are if you want to talk. But please tell us where you are a little bit in your program, what you identified with tonight. And let us get to know who you are so that we can fill up our hearts with love from you. I do have a basket here. We will be passing the basket. We do have some expenses. Mostly it's just electricity here at this building, but we would like to pass the basket tonight, and I thank you for contributions to our intergroup, because this is an intergroup function. Without the support of all the groups, we wouldn't all be here tonight. So. Anyway, I would like for somebody to be the first one to volunteer, or I might just have to call on people. We used to have a meeting where we got up in front of everybody and talked every time we met, didn't we?
Yes.
All right.
That was back in the 80s.
Yes, it was.
Well, today, I'm Lisa, compulsive overeater. Today, abstinence is the most important part of my program, because I got away from OA and gained 150, 60, 70 pounds, something like that. And so I know for a fact that if you don't stay abstinent, it just keeps getting worse. And today, I want to reverse the process of the disease and stop it and reverse it instead of letting it continue to progress. The third step prayer, I've been in another fellowship for 30 years, and the third step prayer in there, just the same one we use, never really got me in touch with a higher power. So my sponsor has me rewrite the third step prayer in language that meant something to me that I could commit to and read on a daily basis.
So I'm praying to the spirit of joy, because I want to be joyful and happy and playful today. I don't want to worry and be in fear. And I want to not boss people around and not have my own way. I don't want to let myself think I'm God. And so I rewrote that prayer so I can be happy, joyous, and free. And every day I call my sponsor. I make a commitment to do that, even though I was going to see her tonight. I called for just a few minutes because I want to be responsible for my commitment that I made when I first asked her to be my sponsor. She told me she would sponsor me, but I had to call her every day, and I had to call in my food. I haven't been as good about calling in my food lately, but I do know how to be abstinent, and I call as often as I can remember to do that. I call her on the phone and we talk, and then she prefers me to call in my food after I get off the phone, and sometimes I forget to call her back. But I make meetings in 12-step programs, about 7 a week, and I just have Monday night off where I'm not at a meeting, and I think I make 3 or 4 OA meetings a week, and go to the special functions. I contact other people in the program. I do the step work in our 12 and 12 step book, and I'm on step 10 right now. And so my sponsor has me writing down 5 feelings I have each day and 10 things I'm grateful for, and I read the literature. And these are the things that I do to keep in recovery. And it used to be, in the past, I was just making meetings and eating a real rigid food plan before I relapsed. And I didn't know the value of working the steps, that that's where our recovery comes from, because we're trying to recover a sane life with a contact with a higher power, doing the higher power's will rather than our own. If you don't work the steps and you're just abstinent, you're just abstinent. You're not growing. And so we're supposed to be enjoying life in the here and now and not regretting the past, and not always focusing on the future, but we're supposed to live in today, and that's what I'm trying to do in OA.
Pushing me to come up, so I guess I'll okay. I'm Matt, compulsive overeater. I'm glad that she's here. You know, better to never have the disease than to have to fight it. But so I've had been in the program for about 6 months and lost some weight, but struggled with abstinence. I've had 2 surgeries to lose weight, and I have my most recent one about a month ago. And that was a big decision. But even having said that, I felt there was a point where I was weighing myself several times a day. And I know in the program it discourages that kind of behavior. And I'm learning why they say that. So I'm thankful, though, that between the program, my higher power, and my physical changes, I'm not as crazy hungry as I used to be. And so the temptation to eat in between the 3 meals has gone down quite a bit. But working the steps with my sponsor and going to meetings, I'm really thankful that we've got a group that's active, and I don't have to go very far to find a meeting. Thanks.
I'm Barbara. I'm a sugar addict, recovering compulsive overeater.
Hi, Barbara.
I have been in the program. This is almost 8 years. I came in a week before Christmas, and, you know, today starts that period of time where everything is food from now until Valentine's. Mm-hmm. And it is just a beautiful experience where I am right now to go into this without the cravings. I had finally realized that I was looking at some figures that a nutritionist gave me before I came in, and I'm 100 pounds less than I used to be, but when I came into OA, I weighed about 50, 60 pounds more than I do now. And before that, she had given me calorie counts, you know, to set up my nutrition. And it suddenly occurred to me that I stayed at the top of that level of calorie counts when I stayed within the range. And when I didn't stay within the range, it was going above. And I was gaining weight back. And I hold a position beyond the group level that, you know, I'm supposed to be abstinent. And you don't gain weight when you're abstinent if you're my size. But right now I have made a new commitment, and it is an easy position to be in. Abstinence is easy. I reduced the calories that I was looking at by 250 a day, and I'm staying in the middle of it, not at the top of that, and it's, I'm not hungry. I'm doing just fine. And as the abstinence comes, it's all tied together. The abstinence comes and the contentment comes, the peace, the serenity, the acceptance of who I am. I used to lie to my husband, Vicki, all the time. And I was aware today that, you know, several times recently he has jumped on me when I did something for him and he didn't think I did it right. And when he does that, I say, "You're welcome." And, you know, I'm just saying, I tried to do what you wanted me to do. And if it doesn't suit you, I tried to do what you wanted me to do. And that's where I am, and that's all I can do. And it's an honest position. I wish I was perfect. But trying to be perfect made me terrified. My husband could not ride with me driving the car. He just thought I was a terrible driver. But the reason was that when I was driving the car with him in the car, he was telling me how to do it and second-guessing any decision I made, and I was a nervous wreck. He had major surgeries one summer, and he had two major surgeries. And he started driving against medical advice because we could stand my having to take him across town for, he got bad infections, and we could not ride across town every day. So he started driving. But after I got in OA, I drove to Brownwood with him riding in the car, and he never realized, you know, he didn't remember that I had driven. Because he wasn't upset, because I was not reacting to him. And that's who I am when I'm working my program, is somebody that is at peace, no matter what's around me. And it's just, it's marvelous, and I'm glad I'm here. And I'm glad that the weight is going down and I feel more honest.
Too much because I know this, we're not a diet and calorie club, but I carry it around as a reminder. I'm Patrick, compulsive overeater. And the key piece of my recovery, while I came in the program in 2010 in November and in Austin, actually, and then moved to Midland later. But anyway, the key, that particular time, it's a small thing, and we have one child in the group, but I didn't like children. I mean, at the time, and I was really kind of just sort of grumpy. And I wasn't really big on nature at all. And not that I turned into a, But I know that I was thinking about food, obsessed with food all the time, and I could go on about the weight loss and how different or whatever, but I know that my spirit, and I also could never get with my crazy diets under 210 pounds ever, and I had this sort of like mental fog because of the foods I was, I mean the junk I was eating, but that's secondary to this that I didn't like children, and I was just sort of very negative and sarcastic, and I didn't like nature, and I mean it just didn't do anything for me, you know. But I mean, when I got in the program and I worked the steps, actually I came through the back door. Thankfully, because of some work lately, I've been doing more step work in this particular group, but I started to like children, and I also started to really notice the blue sky. I mean, I know it sounds kind of really kind of warm and fuzzy and everything, and my obsession with food. I mean, it was starting to get to be, and as they said on one of the OA recovery tapes, speaker tapes, and I've shared this in my group over and over, but. One of the tapes that's on speakers.org, xaspeakers.org, which is just a website and has some really good OA speakers, was that the person didn't care that they lost the weight. They just prayed to God that they would stop having that constant obsession with thinking about food, which is really physically and emotionally painful. And that was about 3 months into recovery, through saying that outright in a meeting and praying about it, that was released. I mean, even denying the small thing was that the people I'm with, we had to actually wait till after we're going to eat. I mean, we're going to eat before and after, and it was a pretty smooth decision that we're going to eat afterwards, and that is a miracle. But, you know, so those were subtle elements, but very significant elements, in addition to the fact that I mean, my abstinence isn't perfect, and I need to really work on that. But nonetheless, I don't have obsessions with all my trigger foods, peanuts, processed flour, processed sugar, raisins. Everybody knows in my group is I'm like the peanuts and raisin guy, and banana chips. And those don't really, I mean, I'm abstinent for more or less from my trigger foods, with the exception of peanuts. They don't bother me the way they used to. But anyway, grateful to be here, and I'm grateful we have a Lean and Mean program in Midland.
I'm Sharon. I'm a compulsive eater. Thank you so much for your sharing, Vicki. I've known you before, but it was really a blessing to hear your story more completely than I have before. And you brought so much to us here this evening. I appreciate you. I heard somebody mention obsession with the scale. And in my disease, I've been that 25 pounds more than I am now, and I've been 15 pounds less than I am now, because my disease is two-sided. I could restrict my food and go in that direction, or I can overeat and go in that direction. So what recovery looks like to me is that I feed my body according to my food plan four times a day, three meals and a planned snack. And it's not up to me what quantities I want to eat, and it's not up to me what foods I want to choose to eat. I have my plan of a starch or protein, a vegetable, fruit, and I stay within what a portion of each of those things are. And so it's an outline that I follow. And, you know, depending where my emotions are that day, I may not want to eat. And I may want to eat twice what's on my food plan, but it's not up to me to choose. And that's what Vicki talked about with, I recognize that when I take my will back about my food, that I put that between my higher power and I. And one day at a time, I'm not willing to do that. When something happens and I feel like it's the end of the world or whatever, I've got all those people to call first. I've got all those tools to use first. Being back in program this time, I'd been in another program. I came into OA and stayed for 12 years, and then I went away from program altogether for 9 years. That got me really depressed, really sick, really obsessed with everybody else's business. And back into the food, to the point that when I came back in this time, I lost 20 pounds. I'm maintaining that weight loss. The monkey brain is what I call what goes on in there. And, you know, I could wake up in the morning and have some little thing insert itself in there and... You know that thing that my ex-husband said 7 years ago? What did he mean by that? And that can begin to snowball into, well, you know, I have every right to be angry with him, you know? And when that happens, you know, I live alone right now, so it's not like I can blame somebody that's right there that did something right now. There isn't anybody else there. So I go choose something from, you know, ancient history to get angry about. But I recognize that, okay, so I would be angry about that. What do I want to be angry for? Because I'm choosing that feeling. And I'm plugging in whatever I can in that situation so that I get to feel what I want to have. I can feel worthless. I can feel resentful. I can be angry. I can feel better than somebody else. Whatever it is that I'm wanting to feel. But the thing is that if I play that out, okay, I get to be angry. If I pursue that, what am I going to want to do about that? I'm going to want to eat over it. All of my obsession and insanity goes in the direction of I'm going to get miserable enough that I'm going to want to change how I feel. And there's a number of different things that I have a favorite of changing how I feel, but whether it's food, whether it's, you know, deciding somebody else is wrong or I'm worthless or whatever, the bottom line is that if I pursue those trains of thought, the bottom line is I need to change how I feel. And so whenever I'm in a situation like that at this point, I always have to reach for help. and it might be a hand that I reach out to in this room, and it might be my higher power that I reach out to, usually a combination of both. It took me a month in treatment to get to a point where I was willing to surrender that there wasn't something that I'd done before, something that I'd learned before, something that had happened before, that I was going to be able to figure out how to get better, because I was so depressed I couldn't keep track of what was going on in the room. And it happened that I wrote down a prayer because I couldn't keep my thoughts in one place long enough to say a prayer by myself. And when I wrote down that prayer, it was, God, I can't do it. I don't know how. I can't figure it out. I'm finally convinced that there's nothing that I can remember or change or do that's going to help me. And if I'm going to get any better from this point, it's because you're going to do for me what I can't do for myself. I just please help me. And from that time on, I did get better. And from that time on, I started getting on my knees morning and night. And, you know, it just, that willingness to pick up the phone, even if you don't pick up the phone, that inside of me, that change of heart of, right now I want to do this, but God, I'm going to reach for you first, is what changes my life one day at a time. Thank you.
Again, thanks everybody for coming. We say we